For the week of April 6th, 2014, this is Showbiz Sandbox, episode 231, the podcast that brings you all the dirt on the news-making headlines around the entertainment world. In Los Angeles, I'm Jay Sperling Reich.
And at Yankee Stadium, I'm Michael Gills.
You really are at Yankee Stadium, actually. I know, you know, you're joking around, but you're practically there. You were just at opening day where you threw out the ceremonial first pitch to Derek Jeter since it's his last opening day.
Well, it was me, or perhaps it was, you know, the core four, Andy Pettit, Mariano Rivera, throwing to Derek and Jorge Posada. But I was at Yankee Stadium. We're late recording the show. And, of course, at the stadium, Kelly O'Hara, the Broadway star, not Kelly O'Hara, the soccer player, who's a great defender, but Kelly O'Hara, the Broadway star, she's on Broadway right now in the Bridges of Madison County. She began the game by singing the national anthem, did a great job, knocked it out of the park. And that's very fitting, since this week we will be talking about theater.
That's true. Should we talk about what we're going to discuss on this show first, then maybe backtrack to a sad bit of news? Okay, well, we're not only going to be talking about whether you would invest or not invest in certain upcoming Broadway productions, Michael. We did this last year, and you did fairly decent. You kind of avoided some of the real bombs, and
my picks did well.
Yes, you did. You know what? If you're going to invest in a Broadway show, call Michael first. That's really what we're going to be discussing today. We're also going to be talking about the retirement of David Letterman from late night television talk shows. And, you know, he's been doing it, 31 years now?
At least, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess he announced last week that he was retiring. We'll discuss that. We're also going to be discussing, speaking of baseball, Michael, why you can't watch the Dodgers, the Los Angeles Dodgers, in Los Angeles. It's a bit of a problem, and it's gotten a lot of people here in the Southern California area quite irate. And of course, we always begin with entertainment journalist extraordinaire Michael Giltz, who always fills us in on the weekend's box office. But I guess this week we're going to pause for a second in memory of Mickey Rooney.
That's right. Mickey Rooney is dead.
Well, wow. Okay. Yeah.
Is that tactless? He's a great star. He was the biggest star in Hollywood for several years. The world's most famous teenager when he played Andy Hardy in the series of Andy Hardy films, which weren't even supposed to be a vehicle for him as such. But he took over the part and took over the movies immediately. And I think there were like a dozen plus Andy Hardy movies, some of them quite good.
Yeah, I mean, he was a huge star by the time he was 19. And then from the years 1939 to, I think, 41 or 42, he was the biggest box office star in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like I said, he was the biggest in the world. Made a lot of great movies.
Over 200 of them, in fact.
And then, of course, he went on to Broadway as an adult, made his Broadway debut in Sugar Babies. That was the first time I really remembered seeing him, was like on the Oscars or the Tony Awards, sort of like pinching the ass of a woman as he walked across the stage. He liked women a lot.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess, you know.
How many times was he married? Many.
Yeah, eight times. Eight times.
Wow, Elizabeth Taylor-like.
Yeah, well, and Ava Gardner was his first wife. Now, speaking of Elizabeth Taylor, he was in National Velvet with Elizabeth Taylor. I think this guy, Mickey Rooney, starred in a movie with just about everybody.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And some of his best movies include The Black Stallion, National Velvet with Elizabeth Taylor. Apparently they talked about getting married to lots of different people right back then. And his worst movie for me is Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Really?
Well, because that's an embarrassing role. That's incredibly dated. He's playing Asian. It's, you know, it's an...
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's
just
true.
Be removed from memory. Despite that horrible situation, throughout most of his career, delightful actor, great talent, and he's gone.
Yes. Well, and I guess he was also paired quite frequently with Judy Garland. So he's kind of inextricably linked to Miss Garland.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah, they did a lot of movies together. She appeared as a love interest in some of the Andy Hardy films.
Yeah, well, and, you know, he lived right around the corner from me. I didn't realize this until, unfortunately, this morning when I realized he lived in Westlake Village, which is fairly close to where I live. And I met him a couple times. Did you ever meet him?
No.
I mean, he only stood like 5'1" or 5'2".
Not a tall person.
Not a very tall person. Now, you know, before we get into box office data, Michael, I guess we should pause again. So this is a pause to a pause to discuss an email that I received from Patrick Corcoran, the vice president and chief communications officer of the National Association of Theater Owners. So I like to say they're the good NATO, the ones that don't bomb anybody. But okay, yeah, so you did get that joke. And in any case, he listened to episode, I think it was our last episode, episode 230. And of course, Patrick was on our show back on, I guess, a year ago, episode 191, talking about the math behind the movies, or at least movie ticket prices. And he listened last week, listened to episode 230, and he said, "I listened to your CinemaCon podcast, and I need to correct you on the MPAA numbers. The team..."
Now, is he correcting us, or is he correcting Variety? Because I thought we quoted them. What did we get wrong?
Well, he says the teen moviegoers did not decrease 21%. And he reads from the
report. It's the number of frequent moviegoers in that category. So there's a special category of frequent moviegoers. People who go to, I think it's, is it one movie a month? Or what constitutes a frequent moviegoer?
I think it's one movie a month, but given...
And in that category, that is where the 18 to 24-year-old age group dropped. And so it's inaccurate to say overall the 18 to 24 age group dropped. It's only amongst the number of people who go to movies a lot in that particular subcategory where we saw this decline. So what does he say?
He says, and he's quoting from the report, the MPAA report. He says, young people in the 2 to 11 age group represented 15% of moviegoers. And 12,
oh, don't get oh my, okay.
And 12% of tickets sold in 2013, up compared to 2012. And
which the, we mentioned that young people, the yes. 2 to 11 age group had skyrocketed.
And thank you, Frozen, for that. And the only group to increase its share of moviegoers, by the way, was that young group. The share of 12 to 17-year-old moviegoers remained flat compared to 2012, but their share of tickets purchased increased by 1 percentage point. More 18 to 24-year-olds went to the movies, 30 million, but purchased fewer tickets, 226.1 million tickets, than in 2012 when they purchased 256.5 million
tickets. All right, but before you get confused by all the numbers, what we should have said is among 18 to 24-year-olds, a core movie-going demographic, they bought 11% fewer tickets in 2013 compared to 2012.
Right, and there was a decline of frequent moviegoers of 17%.
As well, of 17%, even stronger. So not, it's never good to have a decline.
Yes, and you know, as you were going through those numbers last week, I was, you know, kind of going through the MPAA, the report, because you, those numbers were coming fast and furious from you, and I was trying to make sure that we were getting them all right, and obviously I did a horrible job.
And so did I, clearly. We pulled them from Variety and failed to distinguish between moviegoers and frequent moviegoers.
Yes. But that's the historical box office information and historical ticket sales information. What is happening this week? Are there any tickets being sold this week at all for any movies, or is are we just all watching baseball?
The number one movie around the world, according to RentTrack, which does compile box office figures from the entire world, is Captain America: The Winter Soldier. No surprise, the second week in a row for this movie, it grossed over $200 million. It's made $300 million worldwide so far and counting. It was a monster in North America.
But wait, it's not a monster. A, it's a superhero. So let's get that straight. And B, okay. Apparently, yes, there were a bunch of tickets sold this weekend.
Yes. Yes. $96 million gross in North America, a record for April, blah, blah, blah. That's the movie everybody went to see.
Okay.
However,
uh-oh.
They didn't go see it in 3D.
What?
As Variety said, not even Captain America could save 3D.
Okay.
On its opening weekend, 60% of the people who went to see Captain America saw it in 2D. Only 40% on opening weekend, which is the weekend we have all the fanatics going, only 40% of the people bought a 3D ticket. Some of them had no choice.
Right. I'm sure that some of them...
If you wanted to see it in IMAX, you wanted to see it in large print, you know, you wanted to see it on a fancy screen, you had to see it in 3D most of the time.
Right.
If you wanted to see in just 2D, well, that was that was 60% of the of the box office. That means it was even more in tickets sold because they're cheaper. So in fact, not only is it not 40%, it's probably more like 35% of tickets sold were for 3D or 3D IMAX or 3D premium large format, which means the nicest screen in the movie theater.
So what you're saying is higher gross, lower ticket sales because of the price. Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Right. So this is a movie that set records. People are going crazy for it. They can't wait to see it. They're knocking down the doors. And even for this movie, they could barely break 40% in ticket sales.
Well, you know, here's a movie that...
This is a death knell.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
No, every time there's a 3D movie that doesn't... Look, I think...
This is the biggest movie of the year.
Now,
so
mind
far.
You, is these figures are only for the United States and Canada, correct?
For the 90s, yes. For the percent.
Right.
We know that it's bigger overseas. They're in an earlier part of the cycle. Trust me, in 3 years, they're not going to care about 3D either.
Right.
They're no different than we are. People were crazy for 3D. We had 70% of tickets, 80% of tickets happened all the time in the first wave of all these movies.
And,
now,
and
family
your,
films, forget it. People are like, my kids hate the glasses, and it costs too much money.
Well,
and now
and,
even
and,
for a Captain America, even a diehard 3D type movie, and I didn't hear one person say, oh my God, you have to see this movie in 3D.
Well, and in Europe,
it's well done. It's not crappily done. It's a fine looking movie. The 3D is effective. That's how I saw it at a screening. It's effective. It works. There's a sense of depth. Who cares? Who cares? It makes no increase in pleasure in the movie. Gravity? Yes. A couple times a year? Yes. Captain America? No. Do not waste your money. Don't pay money to see it in IMAX because it wasn't shot in IMAX. Don't pay money to see it in 3D because it's pointless. You'll have just as much fun and spend less money if you see Captain America in 2D.
Well, again, this is a movie that was not necessarily... It was designed in 3D, but not shot in 3D.
Designed? Oh, it was absolutely created to be shown in 3D.
Yes. But not shot
it's not
in 3D.
Where they retrofitted and decided at the last minute. Yeah, but this is how they do it now. This is what people are paying for. You can't act like this is different. They still want their money, whether they shot it in 3D or, you know, designed it so that when they converted it at the end, doesn't matter. They're still charging you the same price.
Well, you know, I received an email, or we received an email from a studio executive over the past week. And it pertained to CinemaScore, because you asked me last week whether anybody cares about CinemaScore. And I said, well, I think if it's A minus or above, they care. And if it's, you know, A minus or B plus and below, they don't. Well, I was with a head of a studio on Sunday. I said, hey, have you heard, the returns on Captain America? They're fantastic. And he said, oh yeah, they're huge. That movie had a lot of heat. Hey, do you know what the CinemaScore was on that? And I looked it up and I said, well, it's an A. And he went, yeah, of course. Yeah, that makes sense. And I said, okay, so do you care about CinemaScore ratings? And he said, we only care if it's A or above. If it's A or A plus, that means the movie will have legs. If it's A minus or below, it's not going to count for anything.
Hmm. Well, that's interesting because we get to Noah, and I want to come back to Captain America at the end, but we get to Noah, which is the number two movie around the world. It grossed $62 million. It's at $178 million worldwide, and the bottom fell out of it in North America, where it dropped a very big 61%.
Well,
so
you also
had
a C
cinema score, a C plus,
I don't
a bad know. Cinema score, and that's bad word of mouth. That fell pretty hard. 60% is, you know, not great.
Yeah, and I guess what both our emailer and the person I was speaking with said, and I would say their names, but neither of them gave me permission to do so. It's accurate if you get an A or an A plus. It's accurate that you will kind of have some legs.
That's a good sign that you should have legs because word of mouth is great.
Right. And if it's B plus or A minus and below, it kind of means you're going to fade pretty quickly. And so they don't really care.
Well, I don't know about that. It might mean it's divisive.
Could. That's
true. People want to talk about it and people want to argue over it, whether it's Blue Velvet or Nymphomania or whatever, or Noah. But in this case, clearly word of mouth was not great.
Well, and I'm not surprised that Noah dropped like a rock this week because, you know, you had Captain...
There was a big spectacle.
Yeah, you had Captain America sucking all the air out of the room.
That's true. But still, $180 million worldwide, so we'll have to see where it ends up. And number three is Divergent with $24 million. That's at $136 million and counting. That has a long way to go overseas, but it's fading fast in North America. It's just past $100 million, though, so it should be fine. And number four around the world is...
Rio 2,
$22 million, $55 million in counting. Still hasn't opened up here, but it's doing gangbusters in the territories where it's opened.
I wonder if it's opened in Brazil. It must be open in Brazil.
It did, yes. That was the first market, I believe. And number five is Mr. Peabody and Sherman, another $16 million on its way to the estimated $300 million we all expect. It's at $240 million worldwide. And number six is the Grand Budapest Hotel, another $11 million. This is at $88 million worldwide. It's doing well in the U.S. It's doing well overseas. He is, in fact, Wes Anderson, he is, in fact, the new Woody Allen. I think he's going to make small-budget movies or, you know, a certain decent budget, and he'll just keep churning out his movies, and he has a fan base, and they're just going to go to his movies no matter what, I think, for many years to come.
And how many of them will actually have stop-motion animation in them? Because...
Half.
Yeah, exactly.
And number seven is the Lego movie. That's at $410 million worldwide. And number eight is Frozen. It also made $8 million this weekend. It passed The Dark Knight, was it?
I don't know, but I don't understand why people are still going to see this movie in the theaters when it's actually out on Blu-ray and DVD. That tells you how good a movie it is.
Well, they went to see it in the theaters overseas.
Oh, good point. Yeah,
I don't
true.
Know. Yeah. And number nine is The Muppets Most Wanted. A bit of a disappointment, but it's at $52 million worldwide. And at number 10, a movie that's a big success story in North America, just like the Grand Budapest Hotel, God's Not Dead. Headline, God's Not Dead. A spoiler alert, I guess.
So wait, let me get this straight. Mickey Rooney?
Dead.
God?
Not dead. Maybe okay. Mickey Rooney should have played God. Then he'd be okay.
I think that should be our new segment. Dead, not dead.
Mickey Rooney's a great talent. We both love him. I mean, you know, I've seen probably 30 or 40 movies at least that he starred in.
Yes.
So, you know, he's a great talent, but he's a funny guy. He's a jokester. He would enjoy the humor. But God's Not Dead is a tiny, tiny independent film in North America. It grossed $7.7 million this weekend. It's opened nowhere else in the world. I don't know if it even will. It's made $32 million and counting. It expanded to over 1,000 screens. It's just doing great at the box office. It's a Christian film.
Yes.
Specifically made for the Christian market, really. It's obviously reaching a wider audience, but it is tearing it up. It's getting greater word of mouth. It's a story about a college student who has to do a term paper and prove that God is dead in order to get an A. Apparently, they get an A.
Well, and it just goes to show you how niche content for niche markets, there is a built-in marketing tool for that.
And that's right. You want to make a movie for the right price, and you want to serve as an audience that isn't getting movies made for them. And of course, movies are made that appeal to Christian audience members. Look at Noah. Lots of Christians have gone to see Noah. But you know, when you make a small film with a small budget, you can really appeal to them. You can really make something that speaks to them and not worry about how it plays for other people. And that makes it oftentimes a better movie. When you're not so worried and trying to appeal to everybody, and you say you make a movie, okay, I'm going to make 42, but I want to make sure white people don't get tired about hearing about Jackie Robinson. You know, when you're worried about how a movie plays beyond its core audience, sometimes you don't make the best possible movie. So this film clearly is speaking to a wider audience. It's spreading the message that they want to spread, and it's, you know, making good money at the box office.
I just want to hear you pronounce the title of number 11. Worldwide at the box office this week.
I forgot to look up the total, the full name of it. It's Ocho Apellidos Vasco. I forget the rest of the movie.
It's Ocho Apellidos Vascos.
No, but there's more to it than that, isn't there?
Nope.
Oh, okay. The eight family named Vascos or whatever it's called. I forget the translation. Another $7 million. It's at $35 million in counting, doing really well. In China, thank God for China, is Need for Speed, which made a ton of money in that territory. This is the movie by the Aaron Paul, one of the stars of Breaking Bad. It's grossed $180 million worldwide, another $6 million this weekend. Its success is almost entirely due to China, which means however much money they made there, they only got like, what, 30%?
If they're lucky, they get 30%.
Oh, what is it, 25?
25. On a good day, they're stealing 30%. I mean, yeah, there's no way they're getting 30%.
It makes the box office numbers look good, but did they make $60 or $80 million in China? I forget what total they're at now, but you got to figure they only got like 15, 20 million of it.
Right.
Wow. So that doesn't really help the bottom line, but it certainly makes it look like a smarter decision.
Well, and remember, the exhibitors are keeping half of that. Well, no, I guess it's 30%. Yeah, no, you're right. You're right.
Yeah.
Doing the math, you know, during the show is never a good idea.
Now let's get back to Captain America. This is unbelievable. This movie is really, really successful. And we all know why, right?
Well, yes, because, you know, Chris Evans is such a good-looking guy. And
he is good-looking.
No, because it's Marvel. That's why.
Right. It's this crazy plan that they had to make three movies leading up to a Avengers superhero team movie.
Don't they call that the After Avengers effect or something like
that?
We'll make
an Iron Man film. And yeah. They made two Iron Man films, right, before the movie came out, right?
They made two Iron Man, yes, two.
Right, they made an Iron Man, and then a sequel, and then a Thor, and then a Captain America, and then they released the Avengers.
Right, and it's called the Avenger Effect.
Avengers was so successful, every movie after that has made even more money. The third Iron Man movie was one of the highest grossing movies of all time. The second Thor, way better than the first Thor. The second Captain America, way better than the first Captain America. It's unbelievable. So everybody else is going to copy this, right? DC is killing themselves. Warner Brothers is killing themselves to try and copy this.
Well, they have to have the characters. They have to have the properties. And I don't know that DC... Well, I mean, DC does, but I don't... Batman is really their...
And Spider-Man. And no, that's Marvel.
That's Marvel, yeah.
Batman and Wonder Woman. And what else is there? Aquaman, which was sort of a joke. Superman, obviously.
Yeah.
But here's the problem. Marvel is pretty unique. DC properties, for some reason, have been done a lot in the popular culture.
Yes.
You had Superman movies and TV shows all since the beginning of television. You had You had Wonder Woman on TV. You had Aquaman on TV. You had Batman again and again and again on TV. Now, they've all been done in animation, and that's really true now for Marvel as well, especially in recent years. But until recent years, really, Marvel properties were not seen on TV. They weren't done at the movies at all. There was The Incredible Hulk and Spider-Man were both on TV in live action. Not long runners, but they were there. But that was about it. Now, there was some early examples in the 60s and so on. There was a Captain America TV movie, two of them, in like the late 70s, early 80s. But really, that's a very, a blip on the dial. Basically, what you're talking about is they had these beloved characters for decades, 40, 50, 60 years, and they'd never really been done in a big way. There were no big TV shows. There were no big movies. They were just sitting there building up cachet. Whereas DC, Superman's been done again and again and again.
So what you're saying is, like 3D, DC has kind of killed the golden goose, whereas Marvel...
No, 3D is just a waste of money. Okay, there's nothing wrong with the Superman TV.
I'm sorry I brought it up.
There's nothing wrong with the TV shows that they made. Superman's had some great TV shows spun off from it. Batman, wildly popular in the 60s, on television. That helped, in a silly cartoonish way, bring the character back to life. But I'm just saying, it's not a simple, all you need to do is make three or four movies leading up to a big team movie and it'll work. No. These are very special characters who've been around a long time and never been done at all, really. I know
they're marketing it properly. There's a lot of reasons. I mean, they're marketing it properly. They're releasing it properly. The way they're structuring the releases is all textbook.
And they're really good.
Oh, well, yeah,
that's
true.
The movies are really good. Yeah, that's the one little tiny detail you don't want to forget. Iron Man got tremendously good reviews. Robert Downey Jr. had a career resurgence based on Iron Man. Everybody kissed his feet. They were so happy to see him in that role. The Thor movie got pretty good reviews. Captain America got good reviews. The Avengers got great reviews. And now the Thor sequel is better critically than the first one. The Captain America is getting great reviews. I mean, these movies are all good.
Yeah.
That's not easy to do.
No.
They did make four movies leading up to the Avengers, and they've made three more since then, but they also made all of them well. And that's the hardest thing to do of all.
Just ask Pixar.
Well, Pixar's made lots of great movies. Sequels, not so much.
Right. Well,
right. They had a little bit, but they've got a long, great track record of quality. But I'm saying there's not a lot of properties like this that have so many decades of unsullied goodwill, where they haven't had TV shows and movies and cartoons and all that sort of wearing away at the property and not making it special anymore. Maybe Star Wars. There's a lot of goodwill for Star Wars. Could you make four or five? They're going to try. They're going to make
true.
A Boba Fett movie. They're going to make a Chewbacca movie. They're going to make a hand, they're going to do all this sort of stuff.
As long as it's better than the Thanksgiving special.
Well, that won't be hard.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not a formula for success. It's a formula for a very unique set of properties, and they executed it tremendously well. That's the hardest part of all. They made good movies.
Well, now, before we move on from box office, we have some stories here about the German box office falling and the Chinese box office rising. Everybody knows, we were just mentioning that. Do we want to cover that, or do we want to move
on? Why does Germany do their Academy Awards, their big Movies of the Year awards? Why do they do it in April?
I have no idea.
Well, somebody in Germany, tell us. But they announced what are essentially their Academy, the German Film Academy Awards, the LOLAs, they're called. I'm wondering why not the Lulas. But anyway, they've been announced a Western set in the Alpine territory. We would think of it as a Western called The Dark Valley. Is this year's frontrunner for Best Picture? It got 9 nominations, tons of credit for the movie. The film we've talked a lot about, which in English is translated as Screw You, Shakespeare.
Yes.
But fuck you, Goethe. This movie is also a big hit, one of their biggest hits ever, grossed $70 million locally. It may even be their biggest German film ever. We're not quite sure, but from what we can tell, we can't find any other German film that ever grossed more in that country. That also was an unexpected nominee for Best Picture. So we look forward to seeing who wins that and seeing The Dark Valley when it comes to America.
Indeed. Now, in Germany, it's almost pointless to talk about the first quarter box office being down a bit when, the box office was flat last year, because we're only talking about 3 months. So, you know what? Why bother? Although, at the same time, we're talking about China with the 34% surge in box office during the first quarter. This is a country that's building between 11 and 13 new screens every single day.
Wow. So they hit $1 billion in the first quarter. They're going to gross $4.6 billion this year. That's what they're estimating now. And to put that in perspective, in the first quarter of 2014, they grossed more than the entire year just 5 years ago. In 2009, the entire year did not amount to $1 billion at the box office. That's how quickly this country is exploding. That's why people are talking about China day in and day out.
That's right.
And they only have 20,000 screens. That's why they're building so many.
I think it's only 18 right now. Well on its way to 20, and it will probably be 24 before the end of the year, and I wouldn't be shocked if...
Again, I quoted the Hollywood Reporter. Maybe I got it wrong, but they're just under 20,000. Then the U.S. has 40,000 screens, and of course we have, like, triple the population, almost quadruple.
Right. I mean, there are some cities with 100 million people in it, and I think it's 100 million people.
That's got to be crowded.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, maybe I'm overestimating the... Yeah, I can't remember all of the facts and figures given to us at CinemaCon, but it was some ridiculous number of millions of citizens in a specific city that did not have any cinema screens whatsoever. And now they're building, like I said, between 11 and 13 new cinema screens every single day.
They have a huge, massive middle class population of hundreds of millions. They do also, of course, have a lot of people who live on much smaller income and subsistence level living in the countryside. So there's a lot of room to grow still in China.
I would tend to agree. I guess
I'm just saying, when you talk about 1.2 billion people, don't think that that's all the middle class. I mean, no country has all of its country in the middle class or higher, but there's a much larger proportion of China where they're not ready to start going to see 3D movies.
Well, if I were in the business of selling movie theater seats right now, I would be opening a China office, that's for sure.
They already have, surely.
Okay, well, let's wrap up our movie and box office section and move along into guest television, and we can talk about... The big news of the week, really, was about David Letterman. And
and it happened in classic contemporary fashion.
That's true.
First of all, I heard about it. Somebody texted me, my brother, and I said, credit to you. You told me first, because often he tells me things. I'm like, yeah, I know. But no, he was the first to tell me. I immediately went online on my smartphone. I was sitting in a cafe and watched. The show hadn't even aired yet, of course. It was still even, I think, it was on the air still. And yet the clip was already out there, and I watched on my smartphone the clip where he told the audience he was, retiring from TV sometime in 2015. So I hear about it. Someone texts me. I go into my smartphone. I watch the video clip on my phone even before it's aired on television that night.
And David Letterman, for those outside the United States, and for those who may not know, he is a late night television talk show host. He's been doing it on one network for 20 some odd years. And previously he was doing it on NBC and was kind of destined to take over The Tonight Show, which Jay Leno then took over, and there was a big brouhaha. And so for 10 years, he was on NBC, and for 20-some-odd years, he's been on CBS. And he is now, after 30, 31 years, announcing his retirement. And it was, as you say, Michael, tweeted out by Mike Mills, the bass player or the guitar player for REM? But he was sitting in with the band, heard the news, and while the show was still going on, decided to send out a little Twitter post about it.
Yeah, he's a bass player for REM. Okay. So, former bass player for the former band REM since they retired.
That's true.
And so then we also saw the wave of news and how it broke the way it's covered today. It used to be if something big happened, Mickey Rooney dies, David Letterman announces his retirement, journalists would get on the phone and go, get me a quote. They'd have to call up these celebrities and people and get a quote. And sometimes they would get quotes in advance for people who were ill and they knew they were going to die. They'd be prepared with their Mickey Rooney quote because they knew he was at death's door or something. In this case, of course, they don't have to do anything. They just wait and look. And in 5 minutes, they've got a Twitter roundup of every celebrity who's weighed in on it and got a quote. There it is sitting there for the entire world to see, including President Obama, who had a very good one. I think he said something like, there are more than 10 top 10 reasons why David Letterman will be missed.
Oh, that's a good one.
I'm paraphrasing that, but I was like, that's a good assistant, whoever did that one. Somebody should get a raise at the White House. That was clever. But,
Well, we should point out he does a top 10 list every night.
Yes, Dave does a top 10 list. Right. So there was, in 5 minutes, they had a Twitter roundup story in which they quoted Ellen DeGeneres and Jimmy Kimmel and eventually President Obama and anyone else that they wanted to quote about what they thought about Dave leaving. And then you had another story a little bit later, the obituaries, where they talk about, his career and who he is and how it's playing out and that sort of thing. Then they waited like an hour, I think, and then they started saying, well, who's going to replace him? Is it going to be John Oliver? Is it going to be... And then another hour later, you got more stories. Oh, The LA people, they're desperate for television. They're sorry they lost the Tonight Show. They want whoever does Dave to come back to LA. Come over here. You know, bring a show to here to LA. You won't be having any competition. So it was, you know, sort of a classic wave of stories. I think you could have mapped it out if you knew it was going to happen. What would happen when? How soon would it take for them to talk about a replacement? You know, it just happened in ballet-like fashion.
Well, I loved the Variety headline. LA mayor begs CBS to move Late Show to California. He probably was asked, hey, do you think, you know, the Late Show on CBS should move to California? And he probably said,
no, no, he dashed a letter and or email off to CBS immediately. No, he was very proactive.
Yeah, so well, Eric Garcetti is our new mayor here in Los Angeles, and he really is proactive. I might add, he is also one of my Facebook friends.
And among the predictions or comments from Twitter was Lena Dunham, who said, am I being silly or too hopeful to think maybe it could be, you know, a little diversity in late night now that Dave's gone? So she obviously is rooting for a woman or some person of color, perhaps, to take part in late night along with Arsenio Hall, who's in syndication. But that is the big question now. All right, Dave's got about a year to go. Who's going to replace him? Now, John Oliver just went to HBO. And we found out now after Dave, this whole story broke, that he was approached, not about Dave's show, but about maybe doing the show after Dave. If Dave left and Craig Ferguson moved up or moved away, you know, would he want to do a late night show? And he was courted by CBS and ended up going to HBO to do what he's doing.
Well, now here's my question. Craig Ferguson is on the show after David Letterman.
Yeah, and it's David Letterman's production company.
Worldwide Pants is the name of the production company. Do you think he's going to get all mad and ticked off that he's not the one that's being considered to take over
He's not even in the running. In fact, they're talking about dumping him.
Really?
Like, and start with a clean slate.
He is the best late night talk show host in Miami. He's one of the best.
I think he's the best by far.
Yeah, he's so good.
Now that Dave's, other than Dave, it's not even close.
Yeah, I mean,
he can actually interview people. He's quirky and he's different. Everybody else is so cookie cutter.
This is a guy that literally compares tattoos with Madeleine Albright, the former Secretary of State, who is very buttoned down and serious and bureaucratic. And there she is in her 60s, maybe even 70s. And here they are on national television.
Sport Inc.
Yeah. Kind of say, oh, well, here's my tattoo. What does your tattoo mean? And I just thought, how funny that you can't get any more real than that.
I love Craig Ferguson. He's not moving up, and he may, in fact, step down from his show. He does have a game show. He's just started a new game show with Courtney Cox and David Arquette. They're producing. He's got a game show. It launches this fall, so he's going to be okay.
And he's in, probably How to Train Your Dragon 2. He played a character.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So he's going to be okay. I'm shocked that they would even think of dumping him. I'm not surprised that they wouldn't move him up. He's too quirky. He's too fun. He's too crazy.
Well, that's kind of David Letterman, right? I mean, he was too quirky.
Exactly.
He was too fun. He was too crazy. And he was too mean to every single person on his show.
Yeah, I think Craig was awesome. But I think Craig Ferguson is great. But the question is now, who replaces him? Number one on the list, Stephen Colbert.
But here's the thing. And everybody is saying, Stephen Colbert is going to take over The Late Show. Would he do it as Stephen Colbert?
No. He would do it as Stephen Colbert. He would not be doing his right-wing character. He would just be doing a variety show. He would be doing a late-night talk show.
Okay, so he wouldn't be the character that he plays.
No. That's the appeal for him. He's done it. It's at some point, you know, God knows how he's maintained it this long, but the appeal would be he gets to move on from that. You know, he's 50, and apparently he's always arranged his contracts in the last few years, so they align with Letterman's. When Letterman's is up, his is up. When Letterman's is up, his is up, and he's done that purposefully.
So shouldn't he be announcing his retirement then, rather than possibly?
That's true.
Just saying.
That's right. And there's, of course, other possibilities. The other one that people mention a lot after Stephen Colbert is Neil Patrick Harris.
Really?
He's funny. He's hosted variety shows. He can sing. He can dance like Jimmy Fallon. He's clever. He's young. He's hip. He's cool. He's gay. He's appealing. He's amiable. He's charming. He's white.
You know what? I don't think that, you know, it's one thing to rehearse a variety show for, you know, 2 weeks and then
He's hosted Live with Regis and Kelly or whatever it's called now. He's done that a fair amount of time. He was talked about being one of the hosts of that show.
Really?
Yeah, when they replaced him. Yeah, he was one of the front runners. Absolutely. I don't know whether he was considering it at that time, but he was absolutely in the mix. No, he's hosted that show. He's appeared on talk shows. He's funny. He's quick-witted. He's smart. He's clever. Blah, blah, blah. He's charming. He's absolutely in the mix.
Wow. Okay. Well, Neil Patrick Harris.
And then
Harris.
There are the chicks. Tina Fey is the first choice. She may not be interested in it, but they'd love to have her.
Yeah, I can't imagine Tina Fey.
Why not? What is she doing?
Well, I guess
she's not busy
writing her next movie, or sitcom, or you know, she
does she want to do another sitcom? She did Saturday Night Live forever. She did a sitcom for many years. It's hard to come up with great fresh shows. She's producing shows, but she's not creating a vehicle for herself, which means this is something new for her to do. You know, it's some new area to conquer. She's conquered books. She's conquered sketch comedy. She's conquered sitcoms. She's conquered movies to a degree. Well, what's next?
You know what
she
I would
be the
say?
The first woman to succeed in late night.
You know what I would look at is rather than looking at all of these celebrities like a Chris Rock or a Neil Patrick Harris or an Ellen DeGeneres, who's also on this list, I would look at stand-up comics. And here's why. That is where Jay Leno came from. That is where Johnny Carson came from. That is where David Letterman came from. They were all stand-up comics because you have to go out there night after night and give a monologue. And that is exactly, I think, who they will wind up with.
Well, you don't have to give a monologue.
That's true. I guess, yeah, that's true. You don't
the
have
whole
to.
Point would be for me to be different. There is Chelsea Handler, who is leaving E!, as we talked about in last week's episode, I think, or 2 weeks ago. The problem is, can she avoid cursing? I do it. I curse all the time. But on this show, I try not to curse. It isn't easy. It kind of tamps down my natural blue-tongued personality. But I do it. Maybe Chelsea could do it, too.
Well, and for those of you who don't know Michael personally, I'm talking, you know, sailors blush.
Like a sailor.
Yeah, but when they're around Michael, they have to cover their ears.
My offbeat pick, beyond the people here are all interesting possibilities. I'm not saying they're not good ideas. They are.
Chelsea Clinton. No? Okay. I thought
that
maybe.
Was,
offbeat.
Sperling, that was funny.
Me, it's me. You think I should host the late show?
No, I always wanted to be a sidekick. Isn't that sad? That's like wanting to, it's like loving baseball and wanting to be a DH. You know? I want to grow up to be a DH, Daddy. So my pick, beyond these people who are all interesting possibilities, my pick, and I think Craig Ferguson should absolutely move up because he's great. But anyway, who I would pick, who I would consider strongly, is Vince Vaughn. Now, I know I've told you this before. When Letterman was sick with his heart surgery, Vince Vaughn and a string of other people came on and hosted the show. Vince Vaughn was like a duck to water. It was unbelievable. It was electric. He got great reviews. And people were like, oh, my God, the man was born to do this. And his movie career is in free fall. He's had one crappy movie after another. The man desperately needs to do something different. He would be a schmoozing, swinging, jazz, hipster, late-night talk show host of your dreams. And I think he would knock it out of the park. And I think they should really strongly consider talking to Vince Vaughn because it's a nutty choice. It's offbeat. I know it's another white guy. That's a little boring. But my God, you've seen him do it, and he did it great. That's half the battle.
Well, and half the fun with someone like Vince Vaughn is you have no idea what he's going to say or do at any given moment.
Yeah, he's a total Rat Pack. He's Rat Pack. You know, he brings that Rat Pack late night show. He might smoke. He might drink. You never know what he'll do.
Well, you know, he used to live around the corner from me, literally. And I would see him down at this restaurant called La Poubelle. And anybody in Los Angeles is probably familiar with La Poubelle. It's this French restaurant in Las Feliz and East Hollywood. And it's grown to be well known over the years. And he'd be sitting in there and he'd just be kind of holding court.
Right, exactly.
And talking so fast. And I thought, how does this guy do it? He's funny just like breathing he's funny.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's just it's something to consider.
So, okay, so we've now solved CBS's problem. We know that in order of desire, it would be Vince Vaughn, then possibly Chelsea Clinton, then me, in terms of, but
which means I get to be your sidekick.
That's true. I think we should just call them and say, "Look, it's going to be a pay cut, but we'll do it." The question is, do we do it in Los Angeles or New York, or do we keep the whole Skype relationship going?
I can't be on a split screen.
Ah, okay. Well, ooh, because you know, if the split screen. Well, wait a second. If the television, or if the camera adds 10 pounds, does a split screen only add 5?
I hope so.
Okay. Well, now, we promised you at the head of the show that we were going to have Michael give us a little bit of a peek into some upcoming Broadway shows. And Michael, you know, David Letterman, I remember when he moved to CBS and he moved into his brand new theater, the Ed Sullivan Theater. It's right there on Broadway.
It's certainly, well, it's, yes, it is on Broadway, literally, and right next across the street from where The Color Purple was playing, where Oprah Winfrey produced her first Broadway show, which is how she marched over and marched back, and they had a lot of fun with that. Right. But yeah, he's right in the neighborhood. He has a lot of Broadway shows, just like Rosie O'Donnell did in her day, and other people are excited by Jimmy Fallon having more Broadway on his show. So yeah, it's right in the heart of it.
Well, okay.
I don't think he ever actually went to a Broadway show. That's not true. I know he's talked about seeing Nathan Lane. He loves Nathan Lane. He's seen him on Broadway. So I know he's seen Nathan Lane, at least. I don't know if he's ever been to anything else.
Okay. Well, with that said, maybe in his future life, he could become a Broadway investor. And if he were going to become
if he wanted to, he could.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, the Broadway season is heating up. And with, you know, Rocky opening to some good reviews and Aladdin just around the corner.
Yeah. Aladdin opened up to very good reviews. Yep.
And of course, every show begins with creative talent, but nothing really happens until you get investors to pony up the money for development and workshops and readings and out-of-town tryouts and the big premiere on Broadway. Since 70% of all Broadway shows lose money for investors, and you should know this, Michael, if you watch Smash. Now, I watch Smash, okay? The NBC show that only lasted two seasons. I watched it. I know all this already. But maybe some of our listeners didn't watch it, so we should fill them in. You know, you'd think that all this would be hard, but the glamour of Broadway and cash cows like, I don't know, the Book of Mormon, they keep bringing all these investors back. And you know what? Now they have somebody to help them, to help in this minefield of what should you invest in? Should you invest or not invest?
And they actually get to see something. You know, they see a workshop production. They hear the songs. Half the time, we're making our predictions based on nothing, just the talent involved. So it's a lot harder.
Right. And when I will, henceforth, we should put this on the record. When you are not being the sidekick on The Late Show, feel free to hold seminars on investing or not investing in a particular Broadway show.
All right.
Now, let's start with Rocky. Would you invest in Rocky? I hear that name. I know nothing about it. And all I can think of is a musical Rocky. You know what? Way too risky. Absolutely not.
Right. Sight unseen, I would have said no. But I saw the show. And now I tell you, I would not invest.
So not only are you're not basing this on nothing, you're basing this on something. However, you will be giving nothing.
Exactly. I would say the Rocky II or Rocky III, those are musicals. Those are big, cartoonish, broad musicals, maybe off-Broadway, but they are musicals. Rocky, the original film.
Who would play the Mr. T character?
Exactly.
Rocky.
You're going to have fun already. You know, or, you know, you got Drago, the Soviet,
that's
you know,
Rocky
killer.
Four. That's Rocky IV.
I know, but I'm saying, you got all these colorful characters in the other Rocky movies. Those are broad cartoons. They are ready to sing. But Rocky is not a musical. It could be a small chamber musical, but it does not work on Broadway at all. It's a mess. I thought it was terrible. Not going to happen.
Well, speaking of musicals, my former dorm mate, Idina Menzel, and former classmate, Anthony Rapp, they are acting, starring, and performing in a new Broadway musical, If/Then. So If Then. It's, so basically, they are performing in a Broadway musical that is actually computer programming. It's an if-then statement.
That's right. It's sort of a create-your-own-adventure Broadway show where the whole trick of the movie musical is like Sliding Doors, the Gwyneth Paltrow movie, where a person has a fateful decision or a seemingly innocuous decision that has fateful consequences. She chooses one thing and this takes her life in this direction of romance and love, or she chooses the other way and it takes her in the romance direction of a successful career. So that's the whole show. You watch
Does
life.
The audience get to pick? Is there an app where you get to go,
No.
Okay.
We get to see both things happen and decide for ourselves which one was better.
Okay. And would you invest or not invest?
No. I saw it, and unfortunately, I would not.
Oh, okay.
It's a mess. People thought in previews it was hard to tell which, you know, particular reality you're in. Is this the reality where she married the soldier and had kids? Or is this the reality where she's an urban planner in New York? You know what? She's a single urban planner. You know, 1,000 extra low-income units, that's really hard to turn into a catchy song. That's why there's no Robert Moses the musical. And it's just, the problem with the show is that both stories are boring. Her life with the soldier is boring. Her life as an urban planner is boring. So the fact that they're cross-cutting back and forth, it doesn't make it interesting.
Okay.
So she's been a big draw. She's pulled the people in, but I don't think it's going to last long term. It's not going to happen.
Is this, you know, we just talked about the Avengers effect on all these Marvel movies. Is this the Frozen effect on the Broadway?
Well, she's been in Rent
and Wicked.
She's been in Wicked. She's a big star. She has not been back to Broadway in a decade. People were dying to see her in a Broadway show, whether or not Frozen had happened, but that certainly didn't hurt.
Now, here's my question. If she covered her skin in green makeup, would it be any better?
No.
Okay. Well, here's one where you had me at the letter A, and it's a raisin in the sun.
That's
the way
right.
I'm looking at it is you can't have a raisin in, say, cloudy weather. So this is already on the right track. You have a raisin, you have a grape, you have the sun, it turns
it's a
into a raisin.
Broadway show.
And then you get Denzel Washington in it, and I'm already opening my checkbook. The $5 that I have in my bank account, you've got it, guys. Well, count me in.
By and large, plays are not worth investing in, especially a play with a limited run, because your upside is so slim, why bother?
Okay.
However, Denzel Washington is such first dollar gross solid. He could appear in a play about ants and people would pay up money to see Denzel. They don't care. It's in Latin. They don't care. They want to see Denzel. It's a very good show. It's a very good production. Your upside is limited. It's only for 14 weeks and they'll probably extend it a week or two, but that's it. He's got movies to make. It's a great cast. It's Denzel. Your upside is limited, but because it's him, I would invest, even though by and large, limited run plays are not worth your time. It's worth it when Denzel Washington is involved.
Okay, well, now we have a ton of different shows here. I'm going to skip ahead and then skip back. I want to talk about somebody who I would see read the phone book, Kelly O'Hara, who you mentioned at the head of the show as singing today at Yankee Stadium.
She's in The Bridges of Madison County, a musical version of course, the book, which was also turned into a feature film starring Clint Eastwood and Meryl Streep. I've seen it. She's lovely. She sings great. The score is actually very good. I think it's a botched production. Sight unseen, I would have been resistant, and I think I would have said no. Having seen it, unfortunately, I wouldn't invest in it either. I think it will be well-produced down the road. I think we'll see a good revival of this show someday in the future, but not now.
Well, and here's a show that I'm sure the company producing would say, thanks, but we really don't need your money, and that is Aladdin.
That's right. Is Disney's putting on Aladdin? You've already got five great songs from the movie. I would have invested in it sight unseen, just like Matilda last season. This musical has been doing great out of the gate. It's been in the $1 million club, which means it's grossing more than $1 million every week. It got very good reviews. The genie's hilarious. Go see the show.
Wait, the genie in Aladdin is hilarious?
That's
so much
right.
different than the movie.
Yeah, yes, no, but that's the hardest part of the show. How do you surpass the memory of Robin Williams in the movie, shape-shifting and doing his Robin Williams riffs? By God, they topped it.
Ooh, I know what you do. Here's what you do. You get somebody to see it who wasn't even born when the movie was released. And that
doesn't matter. They do what he does, but they sing and dance at the same time, and it works great. And that guy's going to win the Tony for Best Supporting Actor in a Musical. It's a lock. Everybody else, go home.
Wow, okay, you heard it here first.
Oh, everybody knows that.
You know who didn't win any awards for his portrayal of, well, I guess, what is it, Jean Valjean?
I don't know. Did he not win? I guess he didn't win a Golden Globe, right?
No. Russell Crowe.
That's right. We're talking about Russell Crowe. There's a revival of Les Mis. I would have been a little weary of it, both weary and wary, because it was just revived in 2006. And of course, you had the film that has only stoked audience anticipation. Again, this show was, you know, hotly anticipated. People were going to see this from the very first preview. It's very well done. Having seen it, I would absolutely. So if I'd flown over to London to see the production, I would have invested in it, especially with this star that they have in it, this Canadian actor who's terrific. And it's a very well done
production.
So terrific,
we can't tell you his name.
Well, it's very hard to remember. It's Ramin Kamalu. I don't know how to say his name. I knew you were going to ask me that.
Worry about it. Let's keep going.
I would have been wary. Having seen it, I absolutely would have happily invested in it.
Okay, well, now, here is in our next show. This one, I swear it was almost as if it were meant to be on Broadway. In fact, Broadway is in the title, Bullets Over Broadway with Zach Braff. He of Garden State fame, you know, the movie Garden State, and also, of course, Scrubs. It's directed by Susan Stroman. Invest or not invest, Michael?
I would invest. I was a little weary, a little scared of it. It's not original music. It's classic old tunes, but they're not the same old tunes we've heard before, like one of her last shows, which was Nice Work If You Can Get It with Matthew Broderick, which did not do great. But this one, I feel like it's a fresher property. It sounds better. I like the songs are not familiar, same old Gershwin numbers that we've heard 100 times before. So, and the buzz is pretty good.
Okay. Well, I'm going to try and motor through some of these. We have something called Act One. It's some play based on a memoir of Moss Hart, and it stars Santino Fontana and this guy, Tony Shalhoub, who, I don't know, every time I see him, he's washing his hands. And Andrea Martin is also in it. Invest or not invest?
Sight Unseen, I love the book. It's a great memoir. Anyone who likes the theater should read Act One by Moss Hart. Anyone who loves the theater probably should not go see the play version of Act One by Moss Hart. It's getting pretty bad buzz. Of course, it hasn't opened yet. I look forward to seeing it, but I would not invest in it. It's ungainly, it's difficult to do, and I would stay away.
Now, this next one I would invest in just because I like the word cabaret. And actually, no, because I like everybody associated with it. We have, it's of course, a revival. Literally, a revival of a revival.
Literally, yeah.
And it's got Alan Cumming. It's directed by Sam Mendes, who,
Rob Marshall.
Yeah, with Rob Marshall. Well, maybe Sam Mendes can add the action to it, as he did with, what was it? His last...
James Bond?
James Bond, thank you. Wow, I could not remember that. And Michelle Williams is in it. You know what? I'm investing, but what are you doing?
I would not have invested in it.
What?
It's a moneymaker, so it's intended to make money. I love Michelle Williams. I'm looking forward to seeing it a lot, but it felt too much like going back to the well.
Okay. You know?
So a sight unseen, I'm dying to see it, but I would not have invested in it.
Now, I know you love Audra McDonald, Michael. She is going to be doing a limited run of a show called Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill. I guess she's going to be playing Billie Holiday, invest or not invest.
It's Audra McDonald. She's money in the bank. I'm scared to death of this because she's playing Billie Holiday. She could not be more poorly matched vocally than anyone in the world. I can sing Billie Holiday better than Audra McDonald is what I would think. But I went on the message boards and everybody's jaws are dropping and saying they didn't know what to expect, but she sounds exactly like Billie Holiday. I don't know how she's doing it. I can't wait to see it. It's a limited run, so I don't like that part of it. So that would make me not invest. But as a property, I think it's going to be a hit.
Okay, now we have, I guess it's an off-Broadway, I guess it's a Broadway debut of an off-Broadway show that did very well, starring Sutton Foster, who, you know, we all love, and she plays a facially disfigured girl heading on a bus to a televangelist she believes will heal her.
It's money in the bank.
Okay.
People love shows about facially disfigured people. You got your Phantom of the Opera, you got your Hunchback of Notre Dame, and now you got your Violet.
Violet is the name of the show. You're investing, apparently.
I missed it when it played off Broadway 2 decades ago. I've been heartbroken ever since. I would have loved to have seen it. I can't wait to see it now. I would not invest in it because there's probably a good reason why it's taken 20 years to come to Broadway.
Ooh, okay. Well, The Realistic Jones...
just reviewed in the New York Times.
That's right.
A money in the bank review, a rave review from Charles Isherwood of the New York Times. If you want any sign of whether to invest in a show, a rave review from the New York Times is really the best thing you can do.
Probably doesn't hurt that Michael C. Hall, Toni Collette, and Marissa Tomei, and Tracy Letts all star in it.
And yet, I would not have invested, and I'm not worried about not doing so, because... it's a very tricky property. Will Eno is a great playwright. He's fascinating. I don't know how commercial he is. And these stars are going to leave the show.
That's
the
true.
Fact that he might have written something that might actually appeal to a broad audience seems very unlikely to me, no matter how brilliant it is. And they're going to go. So once Michael Cimino and Toni Collette and Marissa Tomei are gone, uh-oh, there goes the box office. But they got a rave review, so they might be all right. Still me, I'm not going anywhere near this.
And so Will Eno is the writer that you kind of broke up there a bit. Thank you very much, Skype. You're not only losing 5 pounds on the split screen, but apparently you're losing your voice as well. Now, speaking of losing things, we have a revival of Hedwig and the Angry Inch. If you don't know what the inch is in this particular show, this musical...
see the movie.
See the movie or see the show. It stars Neil Patrick Harris. And here's what I'd like to let CBS know. Again, in order... we had Vince Vaughn, Chelsea Clinton, and then Michael and I hosting The Late Show. Neil Patrick Harris, not available. He's in the Hedwig and the Angry Inch. So just keep that in mind, CBS. But Michael, would you invest or not invest?
Absolutely not.
What?
I love Neil Patrick Harris. I don't see him right for this role, but I'm happy to see him do it. But it's a Broadway house. It makes no sense to me. The Broadway kids love it. On the message boards, they're going, he's great. I love him. It doesn't belong in a Broadway house. A Broadway house is too big for this show. And the second Neil Patrick leaves it, God help you. I mean, it's doing very well. It's doing at the grosses. It's doing fine. People are excited to see it. Hedwig and the Angry Inch last week grossed $700,000. It's at 109% potential of its gross. It only had 6 performances. So it's probably in the $1 million club. It basically sold every ticket and got a premium price for them. People are dying to see him in this, but it just makes no sense to me in a Broadway house. It's wrong. It should be in a shabby, rundown, off-Broadway space. And I don't even feel like Neil is good right for it, but clearly I'm wrong, but would I have invested in it? No.
Okay, so you're not going to invest in Hedwig and the Angry Inch, whether, you know, it's got a working toilet or not. What about this Casa Valentina? Harvey Fierstein, of course, he's Broadway gold, Broadway royalty. It's a comedy about straight men who like to cross-dress and gather in the Catskills annually. John Cullum.
It's also known as the Sperling Reich story.
What? That is not true of anything I gather in Westchester.
Monticello.
I had nothing to go on there. It's directed by Joe Mantello. Invest or not invest?
You know, I'm going to invest.
What?
Harvey Fierstein is gold. He just did Kinky Boots.
That's
and of
true.
Course he's done other great shows. And he's got great commercial sensibilities. And this show sounds like fun. It's going to have a low running cost. It's a play. It's not a musical. And there are really talented people in it, like John Cullum, Patrick Page, and Mayor Winningham. But they're not movie stars who have to leave in 4 weeks. So I'm going to take a roll of the dice on this drama and this comedy and go for it.
Well, we're running long on time here, and we have a ton more to do. So why don't we pick one like
Sting's musical, The Last Ship? No,
okay.
I didn't like the album that he did based on shipbuilders and from his childhood. I want to see the show, but I'm not investing in it. George Takei from Star Trek. He has a show musical about the forced relocation of Japanese Americans on the West Coast during World War II. I love George Takei. I want to see the show. I'm not investing in it,
even though it stars Leia Salonga as well.
Yeah, as long as a great person. I don't want to see, you know, it could be a great musical, but it's a musical about the forced repatriation of Japanese Americans. Not a lot of fun.
Well, now I'm forgetting the name of the musical that I saw, but it was...
Oh, there's lots of downer musicals. There's no question about that. Les Mis. This is The Miserable. So it doesn't have to be a happy show. Titanic. There's a musical about people dying, and yet I want to invest. It played like a decade or two ago. It ran for 800 performances. It's a lovely show. It was hugely expensive, but now it's coming back in a chamber production, done in London to great reviews, so it won't cost as much to run, and it's a great show. There's a core group of fanatics for this musical. I think it's going to do really well. I would invest. I would invest in the revival of On the Town. That's Money in the Bank. And a drama, another drama, The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime. It's based on the best-selling novel. It's about a kid with autism. It's Money in the Bank.
Wow. Okay.
Great reviews in London. Incredibly visual. Really terrifically inventive in the way it's done. I would absolutely invest in that show. And, you know, we'll see what happens.
Well, you know, just because Titanic the movie was a big hit doesn't mean that the musical is going to do good. I mean, what happens when people show up and Kate Winslet and Leo DiCaprio aren't there?
That's true. By the way, Ramin Karimloo is the star of Les Mis, and he's terrific.
Okay, so he's kind of a big deal then.
He's absolutely a big deal.
Aha, then it must be time for Big Deal or Big Whoop, our weekly segment where we discuss the top headlines in entertainment and tell you whether they're really important or just overhyped nonsense. Our first story is about reality TV, because one reality TV show is trumping Survivor by really dropping off its contestants in the middle of nowhere, literally nowhere. Another is insisting they get married to a complete stranger the moment they first meet. Yeah, you know what? I couldn't tell you which one is scarier, frankly. The latter is based on a Dutch series. It's called Married at First Sight. It follows a group of people who have been unlucky in love. Experts find suitable matches they think will work, and the couples agree to be legally married the very first time they meet. The show follows them on their honeymoon and nesting together, with the finale involving the decision after a few weeks of whether they're going to separate or make a go of it. Big deal or big whoop, Michael?
It's a big whoop, I guess, but, you know, like, how much further can they go? I think, like, The Hunger Games was not a glimpse of a horrific dystopian future. It was a pitch.
It was a pitch. Well, maybe CBS will use, you know, put The Hunger Games on at 11:30 at night.
Absolutely right. Exactly. Oh, that would get good ratings.
Yeah, that's no kidding. Well, you know, I think it's kind of interesting because usually producers of reality shows, they're looking for people who will clash, because that makes good TV. So
yes.
Why would you ever get married to anybody that a reality television...
But in this case, they want you to succeed. It's more romantic, but you're going to have sex. I'm assuming they're having sex, right? They're getting married. They're going on their honeymoon. So the idea is, all right, you're with this person. You're not dating them. You're with them. I mean, I guess if they can get divorced a few weeks later, it kind of kills the idea you're married. But it's true. They're legally married. Kind of amazing.
Well, another show that's, I guess, reality-based, it's in the reality format, is The Voice. It's here in the U.S.
I like to call them talent shows, you know, because unlike a reality show, it's people displaying talent.
Right. Well, and at least we hope they're displaying talent. And right now, if they are displaying talent, Pharrell Williams, who was very happy, apparently, he keeps telling me over and over and over again.
I'm so happy.
That he's going to be one of the judges or one of the coaches, or he's going to be doing something on The Voice.
That's right. He's going to be, well, he's been a mentor before, and now he's joined the show officially as one of the new judges since CeeLo Green is stepping down. Is it a big deal? Yes, it's a big, big show for NBC. It's one of their few bright lights. They need to keep going well. Clearly, reality, you know, competition shows do not make celebrities out of judges anymore. They hire celebrities, and Pharrell Williams certainly couldn't be bigger.
I just wonder, will he wear the hat?
Apparently he's sold it to charity and some others. He's never getting rid of the hat.
I know. He wears it one time on the Grammys, and it's just become a meme that he himself is participating in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, despite the closing of thousands of stores in the last 30 years, sales at 1,200-plus publishers remained essentially flat last year, or it's this year, I should say. They rose 1% to just more than $15 billion in 2013. So it was last year. This figure is focused on general interest books, not textbooks, you know, the stuff you buy at colleges for way too much money. Of course, ebooks are the category everyone is looking at, and they had some mixed results, given that 2012 included two massive blockbusters in that category, both The Hunger Games and 50 Shades of Grey. Both of those series were huge on ebooks. Nothing could compare to them, so the fact that overall sales in the ebook category didn't grow is perhaps really not a surprise. Ebooks constituted 25% of unit sales, and almost, I guess, hardcovers and... I don't get this, Michael.
They equaled hardcovers, I think.
Ah, okay. So for general fiction?
Yes.
Okay, so ebooks were grossing $1.3 billion, and hardcover was grossing $1.5 billion. Look, is all of this financial ebook book news a big deal or a big whoop, Michael?
Well, it's a big deal. It's like this. In movies, the year after Avatar came out, you maintained the same box office. All right, you had the biggest hit of all time. It accounted for like 20 other movies of being hits. You know, it was that big a movie. And yet the following year, you maintain the same box office. That's a great sign. So are ebook sales slowing? Not necessarily. We had two huge hits, The Hunger Games, which adults didn't want to be seen reading a teen book, and 50 Shades of Grey, adults didn't want to be seen reading naughty books. And those were massively successful.
And by naughty, you don't mean like Knots and Wood. You mean naughty books.
Right. Yeah. Naughty books. Spanky, spanky. And so those were incredibly popular as ebooks. And yet this year, we've maintained the pace. We haven't dropped, despite the fact that those two spikes in popularity and those two, you know, once in a decade type bestsellers happened. Still, ebooks are growing. And don't forget, these are just figures from established publishers. Does not include Amazon, self-published authors, doesn't include a lot of sales in ebooks that are outside the traditional publishing format.
Well, let's stick with books for a second, because how do you really land a book deal or a TV deal or a movie deal? Well, first of all, I think the best way to do it these days is start a Twitter account and get lots of followers. So that's...
Yeah, even if you're a rock band, get a lot of followers.
That's step one. That's how it happened for the anonymous banker behind the Twitter account Goldman Sachs Elevator. This person's overheard gossip and hilariously indifferent 1% banter proved to be a huge hit, finally landing a book deal for its holder with Simon & Schuster, a book that would expose with comic precision the inner workings of this fabled Wall Street firm. Then the New York Times exposed the owner of the Twitter account as John Lefebvre, who, how can we put this? What's the best way to say it? He does not work at Goldman Sachs, not even as an elevator operator. So that's the end of his juicy book contract. But not so fast. Lefebvre actually is a banker, and Grove Atlantic Publishing House said, hey, it's satire. You don't need to actually work at some place that you're documenting. And they gave him a six-figure advance, and we'll put the book out in November. It's called Straight to Hell, True Tales of Deviance and Excess in the World of Investment Banking.
And by world, we do not mean Goldman Sachs.
That's right. There's no word yet on whether they'll be putting the word true in quotes or not, but is this a big deal or a big whoop, Michael?
Well, it's a big whoop. A guy gets a book deal. It falls apart. He gets it again anyway. So it's already been pre-disastered as far as the truth is concerned. So they're probably happy it came out now. But I have to admit, and maybe check out his Twitter account, it's pretty funny.
Yes, it is.
One of his recent tweets said, the NSA is the only branch of the government that actually listens to people. And he said, on Valentine's Day, I send my wife flowers with a card that says, congratulations. I'm kind of looking forward to it now.
Well, apparently he missed his... Hey, you know what? I hear there's an opening at CBS. You know, here at Showbiz Sandbox, we're big fans of the Korean director Bong Joon-ho and his movies, Mother, which we both saw at Cannes, and especially The Host. So we're glad to hear his box office smash, Snowpiercer, is opening the LA Film Festival June 11th. And
will you go?
I most certainly will. And it's going to open theatrically June 25th. Our only question is, which version of Snowpiercer is opening? Is it the original cut or a truncated version that might make nonsense or no sense at all of the movie storyline? I have a feeling, unfortunately, it will be the latter, but only time will tell. The movie stars Chris Evans, Tilda Swinton, Ed Harris, and Song Kang-ho. The futuristic action film is about a rebellion on a train that must stay constantly in motion in a post-apocalyptic world iced over in a failed attempt to combat global warming. That sounds so cool. Literally, it sounds so cool. See, because it's... Anyway, big deal or big whoop, Michael?
It's a big whoop, not to put down the LA Film Festival, but I'm glad it's coming out. It'll be a big deal if we find out which cut it is. But knowing the Weinsteins are involved, I'm assuming half an hour has been chopped.
Yeah, that's almost a given. They actually try to, you know, they're always negotiating and trying to talk everything down so that they don't have to pay so much. So they actually said, look, if we shave a half an hour off, can we pay less? Now we
don't want the whole film.
Exactly.
We only want three quarters.
We don't need the ending. In any case, the Writers Guild of America has reached a new deal with producers. And as expected, it matches right up with the deal the Directors Guild struck. We kind of figured this would happen, Michael. Negotiations were not contentious, but they were complicated, to say the least, thanks to the ever-changing world of TV content. New rules govern budgets and payouts for everything from a web series on a site with a certain size audience and a budget to how long the web series has a certain budget, then new rules go into effect. Also to how long shows must wait before offering access to reruns on Hulu and the like. But the newest wrinkle involved quote-unquote holds on talent. Historically, writers would work on a pilot or a first season, and then they were put on unpaid hold while they waited to see if a show was renewed or picked up or canceled. This was not really a big deal. It was fine when almost every show produced 22 episodes every season or sometimes even more, and networks all made their decisions about renewals on a timely and consistent basis. Now, however, with shows getting, I don't know, a measly 8 episodes orders and not hearing, you know, word for like a year and a half or a half a year or, you know, who knows how long, they don't hear in a timely fashion about ordering additional episodes. Writers can't afford to just sit around without a paycheck or having to turn work down because they're still on hold. So all bets are off, and by and large, the studios understand, with holds still applying to people who make a serious six-figure salary and the like, which, by the way, is everyone writing for a TV show. Big deal or big whoop, Michael?
Well, I doubt if you get an 8-episode order for, FXX, that you're going to get $250,000, I think it's like an episode or whatever.
Yeah, well, it's like, oh, okay, so it's basically if you get a six-figure salary.
It's only for the top people, yeah.
Okay, all right.
So it really has changed the rules, and it's just waking up to reality. You can't ask someone to write 4 episodes of a script and then make them sit around for a year and not able to do any work because you haven't decided yet whether you want to go to series or make more seasons. What are you going to do? So, they really have to just, it's reasonable. It's complicated. It's a pain in the neck. That's why it took a lot of time. But hey, this is the new world that we live in, isn't it?
Yeah, well, and the seasonality of television used
it's
to
gone.
Be... gone. Yeah, it's gone. So, putting somebody on hold...
Every show debuted in the fall. A few debuted in the spring, and that was it.
Right. And if you were a TV writer, you were on hold when everybody else was on hold, and there were no shows going anyway, so nobody was hiring
right.
anyway.
Who cared if you were on hold? It's called life.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, not only are you on hold, but the entire industry is on hold. So, because they wanted to keep these writing teams together and these writers' rooms together, it made sense, but now it makes no sense at all.
Right.
Speaking of making no sense at all, Time Inc. is getting ready to spin off Time Warner. And that means it's time to, fire somebody. Entertainment Weekly has a new editor, a new creative head, Jess Cagle, who also oversees the very profitable People, because, if you're overseeing one magazine, why not oversee two? And now they also have a lot fewer staff. T TV critic Ken Tucker and Lisa Schwartzbaum were shown the door, and now Owen Gleiberman has been given the boot as well. He was their longtime film critic. This is
along
after
with Lisa.
After 2 decades as the film critic over there at Entertainment Weekly. At the same time, EW is starting to allow, or is that, I guess I should say, beg bloggers to use their platform to post stuff, you know, for like, I don't know, free. Is this a big deal or a big whoop, Michael?
It's a big deal. I don't even know why Entertainment Weekly is still around. I mean, it's so thin. It's clearly just a house organ at this point. It's depressing to see somebody who's, you know, had a job for 20 plus years lose it. God knows what Owen Gleiberman's going to do. I don't feel bad because I haven't had a job in 20 years. So it's just, it's like, I feel like there's going to be like one paid film critic left in America. You know, it's just like they're all these jobs are disappearing. People used to have careers writing entertainment stories on staff or a freelancer like me. It's all gone.
Well, that brings us to another story that's kind of quirky, I guess. I don't know. It's because when it comes to Disney as a company, Michael, you know this. One thing has always been true about this company.
They love to sue.
They love to sue. And you really should not mess with Mickey. That's that's the high-pitched animated rodent that gave the company its start and continues to be the ink-drawn face of the company. You know who I'm talking about, right? Mickey Mouse?
Mickey
yeah.
Mouse.
Joel Zimmerman may learn this lesson, this unwritten law, the hard way. The electronic dance music superstar who performs under the name Deadmau5 is trying to trademark a black and white graphic of a mouse, a mouse head. The graphic resembles the giant glowing mouse head Zimmerman wears while performing as a DJ, but Disney thinks the graphic looks a little bit too much like Mickey and has filed an opposition with the trademark office. Michael, big deal or big whoop?
It's a big whoop. I hope he can afford the lawsuit. Maybe he can't even afford that. I mean, Deadmau5 is very popular. I don't think it really does look like Mickey. It looks like a mouse.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone's going to think, oh, that's Mickey Mouse.
Well, the thing is, the head that he wears, his big glowing electronic head that he wears while performing, is kind of a send-up, a pop culture reference to Mickey Mouse. So when you're trying to actually...
Well, how many years has he been doing it? Why didn't they sue before?
Yeah, he's been doing it now for like, I don't even know how many years.
They blew it.
Yeah.
Too late.
Yeah. But I think it's, you know, basically he's trying to trademark a graphic of the head that is a send-up of Mickey Mouse. So it's all very meme-esque.
I mean, he's been doing that for almost a decade now.
Not meme-esque. Meta is the word I was looking for.
Meta.
Yes. But that kind of concludes Big Deal or Big Whoop and moves us right along into Inside Baseball. And Inside Baseball, for those of you who don't know, it's where we analyze some of the headlines that have the entertainment industry buzzing. We'll explain what they mean for the business and, more importantly, how they affect you. And this week, I guess if you don't live in Los Angeles, maybe this doesn't affect you, but...
Well, it's a harbinger of things to come.
Right. And that's really the reason I thought, hey, you know what, we should really cover this topic, because even though it's happening in Los Angeles and in the United States, this is something that, unless governments intervene, and in countries like the UK, like France, like Australia, they have intervened, and this would not be possible. The fight is between Time Warner Cable and DirecTV over the Los Angeles Dodgers, the Los Angeles baseball team here, the professional baseball team, Major League Baseball, is a monopoly unto itself, a legalized monopoly. And last year, there was a big, you know, knockdown, drag out bidding war between Fox Sports and Time Warner over the rights for the broadcast rights for Dodgers baseball for the next 25 years. Along comes Time Warner, outbids Fox Sports West. They're going to pay $8.35 billion for a 25-year deal for the Dodgers to be on their new, brand new sports network called Sportsnet LA. So that's what happened last year.
So I thought they just bought the rights to show the show. Why are they negotiating with DirecTV rather than whoever owns the Dodgers?
Because they have the broadcast rights and they have a network now. This is the Dodgers network. Sportsnet LA is owned by the Dodgers. The Dodgers started their own...
Right, but why isn't it the Dodgers then and Sportsnet LA negotiating with DirecTV? Why is it Time Warner?
Because,
Time Warner Cable.
Yes.
Time Warner Cable.
Time Warner Cable has the broadcast license for the network.
For this new channel. So it's a new channel, basically like the YES Network is for the Yankees, or ESPN is for Disney, which handles a lot of sports programming, or Turner Classic Movies. There's a new channel in town, and it's called Sportsnet LA, and one of its primary offerings is, of course, the Los Angeles Dodgers baseball team. And now Time Warner Cable has the right or the obligation to market that network to other outlets. So that's on their channel, of course. They're putting it on Time Warner Cable, and now they have to sell it to Satellite and other people as well, and that means negotiating with DirecTV.
That's right, because not everybody in Los Angeles is either A, covered by Time Warner Cable. Some are on Cox, some are on Charter, because, you know, of the geographic monopolies that are provided, so they can't even get Time Warner Cable. Even if they wanted to, they can't. And, of course, others have Dish or DirecTV. I think Joe Flint, writing for the LA Times, put it best. His opening paragraph covering this story writes, he writes, Time Warner Cable and DirecTV are so far apart on a distribution deal for the new Dodger channel, Sportsnet LA, that the two companies can't even agree on whether they are negotiating or not.
That's right. Time Warner Cable said DirecTV walked away, and DirecTV said, that's a lie.
They said, we didn't walk away. It's just that you came to us with some absurd offer, Time Warner Cable, and we just kind of laughed and walked away because obviously you weren't serious about that offer, right? So we're not going to say yes to that.
So, but Time Warner Cable overpaid, perhaps, arguably, the $8+ billion for 25 years to LA Dodgers. That, do they profit now when they sell it to?
That's what they're trying to do. They are trying
to. So they own a piece of the cable company channel?
Yes, along with the Dodgers.
Right. And okay. They're a part owner. They didn't just buy the rights to show it. They are also a part owner.
Right. And also, you know, since they're the ones paying, they are paying, get this, $210 million this year for the rights to broadcast Los Angeles
Sportsnet
Dodgers,
LA.
Sportsnet LA and Los Angeles Dodgers baseball. Now that is the first year, and every year will go up during the 25 years. But here's the thing. Fox, when they had the rights, and this was last year, they had the rights under Prime Ticket, so their Fox Sports West or whatever they were calling their channel, they paid, you know, $39 million. Now everybody in the industry said, look, that was relatively low. Fox Sportsnet LA gets more games.
But it's five times bigger.
Exactly. It's relatively low, and five times more are, that's light years apart.
So now Time Warner Cable is trying to shaft everybody else and say, we paid through the nose, you got to pay through the nose.
Exactly. They're trying to charge. Nobody really knows for sure, but it's rumored, and there's some leaks, of course. Everybody's leaking everything these days. About $5 per subscriber, just under $5 per subscriber.
That's almost what ESPN gets.
Per month. And they don't want this to be, right, it's actually probably a little bit, it's probably on par with what ESPN gets. And all of these other providers, the DirecTVs, the Coxes, all of the MSOs, as they're called in the business, they're saying, look, you've got a one sport network here, okay? It's just baseball right now. You got nothing else going on. So why should we pay as much for that as we do for ESPN and ESPN2 and all of the ESPNs? And even worse, why should we, as MSOs and as cable providers, force our customers to pay for a channel they may or may not want?
Because that's the way we do business.
That's right.
That's the way everybody does business. And so DirecTV came back and said, I'll tell you what, you can get $5 a subscriber. We'll do it a la carte. If anybody of our subscribers wants to pay $5, great. If not, so what? Right. And they said, oh, no, you got to make it part of a package deal. It's got to be part of your programming, and you have to pay $5 for every customer you have, whether or not they actually care about baseball.
Now, all of these other, you know, Cox or Charter or all these other MSOs, these cable providers, they're all waiting to see what DirecTV does, because they're certainly not going to pay more than DirecTV. DirecTV has 30% of the Los Angeles market.
How do they have
market.
So much of the market?
Because people don't like Time Warner Cable. They don't want
But they're not 30. Is it? I mean, 30%, that's got to be their best market in the country.
It is one of them, yes.
I mean, New York, maybe they're just stymied because of the skyscrapers.
That's right. It's very difficult to do DirecTV or Dish or any television. Really, Los Angeles was built for satellite delivery of content because it's flat, it's spread out, there's nothing, you know, line of sight, there's nothing in the way of the satellite signal. So unlike New York or Chicago or maybe even parts of Dallas, where you can't really get a satellite signal, or you can't put a dish on the roof. It's and I know that there are outliers to that, where you can get it in New York City or Queens.
I mean, DirecTV is the number one satellite provider in the country.
Yes,
they have 35 million subscribers. There aren't that many households. There's only like 110 million households, so they have almost over 30% of the entire country.
That's right.
And I never dreamed they had that much of the satellite cable, whatever, TV, pay TV business.
Well, and I just want to point out here, and this is what makes me angry, because you know what? I have Time Warner Cable. So for me, I'm getting the games. Lots of bars and restaurants here in Southern California cannot get the games. You know who can't get the games? The legendary sportscaster who is the Dodger sportscaster, has been the Dodger sportscaster, I think, from the 50s. Vin Scully cannot get Dodger games when the team, I think, in his mid-80s, so he doesn't travel with the team anymore, but he still goes to home games. And he can't, when they're on the road, he can't get, he does live right around the corner.
He's got a very crowded block.
I do, actually. Actually, you know, once I was in the grocery store, a little Vin Scully story, and I hear this voice coming from behind me, and I'm thinking, that sounds so familiar. And he was saying, I came all the way here for these cookies, and wouldn't you know it, they're all out. And I turn around, and there's Vin Scully, because it sounded just like, you know, when he's on
Vin Scully.
Yeah, Vin Scully.
Shockingly enough. You know, so why it's interesting is because we have the monopoly of baseball, which is the only sport that has that monopoly, right?
I believe so. I think football
is a congressionally approved monopoly.
Yes.
We have a monopoly of cable.
A geographic monopoly in this case. They're basically saying you can't, you know, effectively, if Cox doesn't have, you know, the Dodger games, people who live in that geographic area can't say, well, screw you, Cox, I'm going to go over and I'm going to sign up for Time Warner. They can't do it. They'd have to sign up for DirecTV. And guess what? DirecTV does not have it either.
Right. So we got a lot of monopolies butting heads, and that's why it's very, very hard to come to a solution.
Here's the big problem, though. You know the only people paying the price for this?
Who?
Consumers. The fans, the baseball fans. They're the ones that are getting royally shafted here.
Well, the deal could go bite them in the butt eventually for Time Warner Cable. You know, it could prove a drag on them and hurt them, hurt their stock, hurt their company.
Well, I think
bad deals will hurt you. Now that they find themselves trying to desperately ask for a lot of money from other people to make up for it, that's hurting them and that's hurting their business. So, you know, it's not like they won't ever pay a price. They could.
Right. But, you know, here's the thing. You know who doesn't ask you to pay a price?
Who?
Us.
Who could be so wonderful?
We never ask you to pay a price. We give Showbiz Sandbox away for free on places like iTunes, the Microsoft Marketplace, Stitcher, anywhere they give podcasts away for free or aggregate podcasts. That's where you can find our podcasts and you can subscribe to the show. And we really ask that you do subscribe to the show and rate and review the show and all those aggregators. It does help us out. Links to all of the stories that we've discussed on today's show, including this one about Time Warner Cable and the Los Angeles Dodgers, all of that information can be found on our website, showbizsandbox.com. That's where you'll find those ways to subscribe to the show, where you'll find ways to email us and contact us. You can email us, dirt@showbizsandbox.com is our email address. That's dirt@showbizsandbox.com. You can also call and leave us a voicemail. The number to call is 888-567-SAND. That's 888-567-7263. You can also follow us on Twitter.
But not on the street, just on Twitter.
Just on Twitter, yeah. Well, on Twitter, it's a lot easier to find us. We're at Showbiz Sandbox. And on Facebook, if you search for Showbiz Sandbox, guess what? You'll find our page and you can follow us there or like us there or do whatever you do on Facebook to be with us or follow us or stalk us. Or I don't even know what they call it on Facebook. I guess it's like, right, on Facebook?
Yep.
Okay. Well, the music that you hear at the beginning and end of each show is by the popular indie rock group MGMT. They can be found on MySpace or on their website, who is mgmt.com. Michael Giltz has a website. It seems to be revolving lately. Michael, what is it this week?
This week the website is called It's Casting Director, Not Agent, You Idiot.com. Because last week I referred to a casting agent. That's stupid. It's casting director. It's a craft. It's a skill, just like cinematography and production design. I'm in the home of a casting director. I should get it right. So for the love of God, it's casting director, You Idiot.com.
Well, I think, quite honestly, if it were me and I were a casting director, I'd want a casting agent to get me some jobs.
There's no such thing. Oh, it's called casting director.
All right. Well,
that's why you don't use the phrase.
Okay. Well, if you can't find any of Michael's writing about the entertainment industry and entertainment news on that particular website, and if you can't find that website at all, try michaelgiltz.com, or of course, you can run on over to his site, bookfilter.com. Some of my writing can be found on celluloidjunkie.com. Until next week, play nice.